Congratulations. Nobody under 50 does. Quick, name the star of that show. I couldn't do it either. Had to Google it just now. Answer? Daniel J. Travanti, who won 2 Emmys and a Golden Globe. A fine and talented actor still working in mostly anonymous TV guest shots at the age of 77. Just one example of how fleeting the bright spotlight can be. The Bob Hope Airport in Southern California recently changed its name to the Hollywood Burbank Airport because they needed bigger name recognition. Bob Hope wasn't a singer. Dean Martin was a gifted artist with leading man looks who left behind a legacy that includes the biggest comedy box office team of all time with Jerry Lewis, many stunning dramatic film performances, and a hit TV show that ran for 9 seasons. How is he remembered now? As the guy who sang Volare. Prince's legacy will be Purple Rain, the song, not the movie. And when it comes to the movies, you can count on 2 hands the classic old films and the great actors who were lucky enough to star in them that live on recognizably. Films like The Godfather give performers such as Pacino and Brando eternal illumination. Goodfellas and Raging Bull afford Bob De Niro and Joe Pesci infinite acclaim. Harrison Ford will be Han Solo in Heaven, and Carrie Fisher's memory will never escape the embrace of the unforgettable Princess Leia. And the stars who died while still young, talented, and gorgeous, they remain, James Dean, Heath Ledger, and Marilyn Monroe, forevermore, frozen in time and our brain cells. But for most of us other actors, we tend to be disposable. Even if in 1994 your star was attached to a critically acclaimed cult comedy called The Ref, 2 decades later it leads to questions such as this. Hey, what was the name of that lesbian-looking guy in that Christmas movie where he takes a crazy family hostage? I'm sure this conversation is happening in an airport somewhere in America right now as you listen to this. Fan. Hey, man, are you Kevin Bacon? Kevin Bacon. Yes, I am. Fan. Man, I loved you in The Ref. Which is a far better conversation to hear than this one. Fan. Hey, man, are you Kevin Bacon? Kevin Bacon. Yeah. Hey, how you doing? I saw you take a shit behind my cousin's house last summer. The one guaranteed inescapable form of infamy exists on the political world stage. Serve an asshole term or two in the White House, or become the head dick of a dictatorially repressive evil government, and that ugly stench will stain your name for as long as this planet exists, and ruin things for everyone else in your family. Think about it. How many folks have you met with the last name Hitler? And have you ever met an Adolf? Or even a dog with that name? There's a reason you'll never study at the Joseph Goebbels Journalism School or fly Bin Laden Airlines. It's a law of human nature that power can sometimes corrupt people, but absolute power, that is a guaranteed shit show. Which is why we invented democracy, because we get to write the shit show when it finally hits the fan. Who knows what damage a good POTUS 45 may do in the next few years. If he turns things around and really does make America great again, people will spend eternity posing for pictures on the solid gold Donald statue that Trump himself erects outside his D.C. hotel. But if he fucks it all up and gets ousted in 2020, he'll still build the statue, but the only posing on it will be done by pigeons and angry voters giving his sculpted visage the finger. There is no Richard Nixon statue in Washington, D.C., and there won't be a Nixon airport anywhere, ever. And it's unlikely that we will see Hillary in a larger-than-life stone depiction. But someday, there will be a statue of America's first female president adorning a federal lawn or official edifice somewhere. As a matter of fact, we could use a lot more statues commemorating what women have done for this country. Abraham Lincoln's mom, George Washington's wife, Betty fucking Ford, who was instrumental in bringing awareness about drug and alcohol abuse, breast cancer, abortion, and equal rights for women into the public eye, along with perfecting the disco dance move The Bump at a White House musical gala, as the wife of a Republican president. As I said earlier, electing a woman from either party to the Oval Office will not only be a first, but a first step in a long overdue endeavor. How soon that happens is really up to the same kids who think of Steve McQueen as an Oscar-winning British film director. Youth is not wasted on the young. That's why they can party all night and still find their cell phones in the morning. Dr. Dennis Leary. 60 is the new go fuck yourself. Or, dear millennials. Dear millennials, it's not what you think. I don't intend to spend this chapter tearing you a new one. And here's why. I just turned 60, and of these four things, I am certain. One, bacon is king. Two, whoever invented apple whiskey sure as fuck ain't Irish. Three, I know where my keys are, just give me a few minutes. And four, you guys are the best bet America has going for it. I raised two of you and uncled another 12, and I'm the godfather of three. I have a lot of dogs in this race, and so far, it's been a distinctly impressive experience. I have to say that the all-American attributes of brains, brawn, sincerity, and sarcasm are being carried on with boundless ability, at least in my family. I can't spend 4 minutes around my niece's, nephew's son or daughter without learning some new fact while being satirized about my sweatpants and beaten to a rebound. There are an estimated 80 million millennials now, surpassing baby boomers as our nation's biggest age group. That's a massive swath of economic and intellectual power, energized by a proven desire to engage with peers and express opinions on a 24/7 digital basis. I love my two children, who are now adults aged 25 and 27. And not just because I'm supposed to. They're funny and smart and care about what happens in the world around them. They vote and do so diligently. They speak out against racism and sexism and support gay and transgender rights. I admire their energy and I'm proud of their beliefs. Do I wish they would invent the best-selling app so their mother and I could sue them for a percentage and then buy our own island somewhere? Fuck yeah. But I've recently given up that dream and accepted them for who they really are. Part of a generation focused on making things better. Current studies prove that millennials are more socially conscious than any previous generation of Americans. Ever. And they are the most racially diverse, best educated, and politically active group in the history of the country. Studies also show the depth of their devotion to saving the environment and protecting the planet from impending chaos due to climate change. And I'm with you guys on that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not about to start counting Kleenex so you can live 8 years longer. Or drive an eco-friendly car shaped like a shoe that runs on kale and unicorn size. But I truly admire what you've accomplished so far and hold great hope about what you will do in the future, despite how often the critics climb all over your flaws. My generation was labeled the me generation. You've been described as the triple me generation, with a maddening mix of polar opposite inclinations. Self-absorbed, yet globally active. Allergic to books, but addicted to reading your phones, smug and terrified. I get the dichotomy and choose to cut you some slack on your softer side because your upside is so immensely full of savvy business ideas. You don't just use social media, you invented it. Google, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, The Skim, Tinder, and Hinge, all created and run by millennials, as well as Dropbox, Airbnb, Pinterest, and Quora, along with many other financial, travel, food, and entertainment apps, plus an array of socially conscious and practically relevant products that make the world an easier place to inhabit. Solar-energized outdoor grills, cell phone batteries powered by walking, cavity-fighting gum, Alzheimer patient alarm clothing, seizure-sensitive smartwatches, solar-powered emergency lights, disinfectant lighting systems for hospitals, laboratories, and the food service industry, thermal cell phone photo printers, portable aquaponic incubators, affordable titanium exoskeleton and low-cost robotic hands. What did my generation invent? The Apple Bong. Which may have been invented even earlier, but we didn't have Google, and we were far too high and lazy to walk to the library and look it up. And just to be clear, we thought about inventing robotic hands, mostly for masturbation purposes, but we forgot to write the idea down. The data so far shows that you guys vote, donate, start businesses, create jobs, and value equality in record numbers. The evidence also proves that when it comes to science, math, and technological advances, you've done more in 3.5 decades than any other age group. What did my generation do? Cocaine and Quaaludes mostly, with a side order of really stupid fucking haircuts. So take my advice with a grain of blow, but take it anyways. there are a few aspects of your collective personality that could be improved upon. I know, I'm painting with an incredibly broad 80 million strong brush here, but these traits are endemic to your age, if not present, in each of you. Number one, vinyl. Listen to me. The cool sounds old records emit may soothe your musical soul for the time being, but someday soon, you will have to move into an apartment or house without enough space to hold your collection of pampered paper and plastic. You may even fall in love with someone who says, it's me or your Evan Dando on 180-gram white vinyl. Either way, cut the cord now. Don't be a bitch to basic technology that can be easily warped, burned, or broken. Do you really want to lose all your favorite music and the countless dollars you laid down for it in a water pipe explosion? Or simply because your upstairs neighbor forgot he lit a candle? Trust me, we waited for thousands of decades to get phones and then another 130 years to develop ones you can walk around with while listening to music. If you think finding, buying, carrying, caring for, and storing vinyl is better, you're probably smoking too much weed. The cleaning of which was the only thing I ever liked about vinyl in the first place. Any double album was an awesome way to separate twigs and seeds from the rest of the raw plant back in the day. Those would be the same days when the keyboard player from Yes was putting out 2-disc live sets of acid-induced prog rock. Take it from me, the coolest sound any Rick Wakeman prog rock record ever made was the dripping hiss of its own plastic when I took a Bic lighter to my brother's copy. I just Googled Rick Wakeman 180-gram vinyl, and the first thing up was a copy of his 27-song 1974 double album called Journey to the Center of the Earth, based on the Jules Verne science fiction novel of the same name. Let me repeat that. 27 songs. From the keyboard player in Yes, about science fiction, on 180-gram vinyl. Stop it. Stop it right now. Even if you aren't buying this shit, you started the trend. And I guarantee all 27 songs sound just as endless now as they did on the day they were first released. Sell all your inane records and get some of the money back before I go on a personal coast-to-coast, city-by-city melt-a-thon. Number two, beards and French bulldogs. Don't try to deny it. These two totems of millennial city life come directly from your generation. And if you feel as though I'm making you into some kind of a caricature, I offer you this simple and indisputable fact. On a city block in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, I recently sat with a friend drinking coffee as we counted 17 French bulldogs within 1/2 hour. The owners included 11 men sporting complicated facial fuzz and some form of flannel shirt. Lumbersexuals, another trend started by your age group. To look more manly, I presume. But asking one of these bulldog-toting, hairy he-men to swing a hammer or change a tire might be met with a look of pure panic. Do me a favor. Mix it up a little, okay? Throw in a beagle, maybe even a fucking t-shirt or two, and some shaving cream. You're starting to look like a cult of macho hipsters who need to call the cops when they see a loose lug nut or German shepherd. Plus, we're tired of staring at egg yolk in your chin wool. Number three, look up. Turn off your phone every once in a while and engage with the actual world instead of the digital one, okay? There are conversations to be had face-to-face and opinions to be expressed without using emojis or body ink. You lead the world in nose rings, neck tats, and distracted walking deaths. So many millennials get run over this way that law enforcement has a new term for you. Pedestrians. I know it's a breaking news era where every other second seems to hold a key announcement you need to be aware of, but there are more pressing and immediate concerns, like trucks and buses, bearing down on you and your device. Smartphones can do many things, but warning you of oncoming traffic while you rage text an ex isn't one of them. Now there's an idea for an app. Instaflat. Like Candy Crush. It sends out an alarm when you're about to be turned into roadkill. Shit. Maybe roadkill should be the name. Keep listening while I text this idea to my kids, who are probably reading their phones as they cross a busy intersection right now. Four. Unsafe spaces. As evidenced by the previous entry, you're surrounded by them. Especially when you are so involved with texting and selfieing your precious life away in public places while enormous vehicles approach at Vin Diesel speed levels. Look, The entire Earth is an unsafe space, okay? As a matter of fact, the only safe space you ever had was your mother's womb. So unless you plan on climbing back in, get ready for the real world where bad things happen all the time. Death by selfie, or death by disease, or death by falling air conditioning unit. Not to mention terror attacks and mass shootings run amok. Your generation has grown up in a time when going to see a movie now requires 3D glasses and a grenade launcher. So I understand the desire to create a place where you can control which words, ideas, and images are allowed to enter your private environment. But let's be honest here. That ain't gonna happen. Smartphones may have an arsenal of filters that can make your waist seem thinner than Bella Thorne's or chisel your cheekbones till you turn into Gisele Bündchen's brother. But it can't keep reality at bay. You ain't Bella Thorne or Zac fucking Efron, thank God. But look at the bright side. You are much safer than any previous generation. Back in the 60s, we found out how much life can suck right from the start. There were no car seats for kids in those days. We sat on our mother's laps, and if Dad suddenly had to jam on the brakes, we bounced our heads off steel dashboards and edgy iron door handles. There weren't even any seat belts until 1968, but that didn't matter because the seats were stuffed with coal dust foam and asbestos-coated coiled wire. If you didn't lose an eye in an accident, later on, you could lose a lung just from riding around. And bike helmets? We barely had hockey helmets, which were essentially thin plastic lampshades with a chin strap attached. Visors? Mouth guards? Those were apparently for pussies because our entire faces were just up for grabs. It was hard to complain about a few missing teeth or a detached retina when the family next door had a son ducking bullets in Vietnam and political leaders were getting their heads blown off on TV every couple of months. What was our safe space? Sex. Until herpes showed up. And then AIDS. Both of which arrived on the scene right about the same time the first babies in your generation were born. 1980. So I see your safe space and raise you two trigger warnings. Ann Coulter and Milo Yiannopoulos. Regardless of their ideology and approach to expressing it, their words cannot hurt you. But refusing to let them speak does. I disagree with almost everything they have to say, but I seek out such controversial points of view so I can keep my political compass on point. You can't book a series of same-sounding liberal speakers and learn anything other than what you already know. Open the floodgates. You can only gain from the experience. Because, as proven by Milo, sometimes when you give an asshole a microphone, he or she will end up expressing themselves right out of a job. And the media spotlight. Number 5. Safe spaces, unsafe titles. Wesleyan University has a dormitory named Open House that is labeled as a safe space for LGBTQQFAGPBDSM. These are not just really shitty letters to get in Words with Friends, okay? They represent members of different student groups who live on campus, and a t-shirt that requires way too much fucking reading time. I'm hoping the FAG in the middle is an on-purpose fuck you. Otherwise, we really should go back to the drawing board here, folks. The letters stand for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, transsexual, queer, questioning, flexual, asexual, genderfuck, polyamorous, bondage slash discipline, dominance slash submission, sadism, masochism. When I was at Emerson College, we just called that the weekend. A ton of us are with you in spirit, but please keep the letters to 5, maybe 6. Once you get to 7 and beyond, it becomes so manic a mouthful that our modern-day ADD turns it all into politically correct mush. There are also many other iterations flying around out there, like these. LGBTQIAPK. LGBTQQIP2SA. LGBTTQQIAAP2S. It's hard to market a series of letters that start to look like European fucking license plates. LGBTQ plus may not have every single group represented by letter, but the plus sign implies inclusion and is much easier to brand. Not to mention, remember, especially for older people like me, men mistaken for lesbians. So, if you do stick with the ultra-long version, can we add in the letters MMFL? By the way, my kids haven't texted me back yet. Number 6, beer and booze. Speaking of marketing, you guys have managed to take dead beer brands that my generation paid $5 a case for and resurrect them as top-shelf bar items worth $6 a glass. Pabst Blue Ribbon, Narragansett, and Genesee Cream Ale were part beer, part paint thinner back in my day. Now, they're cool enough to have their own hats and apparel. I actually admire your ironic sense of taste and the resilience of your livers on that front. But when it comes to booze, you guys have a somewhat softer palate. Here's the top 10 list of flavored vodkas that have been developed over the last decade or so to slake your hip young thirst. 1. Banana. 2. Coconut. 3. Kissed caramel. 4. Caramel apple. 5. Bubblegum. 6. Cotton candy. 7. Whipped cream. 8. Peanut butter and jelly. 9. Buttered popcorn. And 10. Wedding cake. I'm not fucking with you. They are all real, and a recent extremely positive 4-star review of Pearl's Wedding Cake Vodka includes the line, quote, "very sweet and pungent. There's no bite here and no noticeable vodka character," unquote. The vodka taster commends the vodka manufacturer for making a vodka that doesn't even remotely taste like one. Which goes back to my 20-year-old complaint about flavored coffee. If you don't like the taste of it but you still need some speed, put caffeine into a pumpkin spice fucking soda. Don't ruin a perfectly good Java because you're jonesing for some junior mints. I'd apply the same theory to snack-infused vodkas. The message here? Maybe you shouldn't be drinking. You should be eating vodka-infused snacks. My generation didn't invent alcoholism, but we sure set some world records for it. Let your generation make a breakthrough. Fuck blackouts. You guys can have snackouts. Cook that wedding cake with some Kettle One and get fined for DUIWC. Make the cops pull you over on your way home from a movie and ask, "how many bags of popcorn did you eat tonight, sir?" Okay, so my kids still haven't texted me back. This is the iCloud of anxiety I deal with every single day. The digital gap that occurs between reaching out to my adult children and waiting for them to reach back. In that quiet air sits all the troubled territory an empty nest parent has to patrol. Where are they? How are they? Who are they with? What are they doing? When they were small, each evening my wife and I could count on finding out all the amazing tiny details of their day at the dinner table. Every emotional undertow coursing through their little lives would spill out as the sun set and they were back in our eager arms. We were happy to erase every tear and fear, to cure each rash and scratch, to hold them close through fevered nights and chase the scary monsters into a star-filled sky. As they turned into teenagers, Anne and I were witness to less detail but more questions, which we happily answered, usually over dinner. We still had them in our safety zone. But now they exist away from us. Any distance becoming so enormous that just a few hours travel time, or even 20 city blocks, can sometimes feel as if it were an ocean. Common sense tells me they're fine, because bad news travels fast no matter what form it takes. It's not an urgent emergency call I'm waiting to answer, it's just the wish to hear their voices and read the vocal tea leaves for worry, emotional pain, or disappointment. That radio silence is my daily agitator. Every morning, my heart aches with a desire to protect them from the arrows of love lost, friendships broken, and delicate dreams that may be dying on the vine. I used to wonder why my mom wanted me to call her more often, even when I was a successful 40-year-old man. And now I know why. The job of being a parent never stops. My son may be 6'6" and weigh 225 pounds, but to me, he's still my lanky, firstborn foal. My daughter is a strong, smart woman full of creative energy and new ideas, but all I see is my precious little girl who needs careful protection. Just the thought of them wandering around this treacherous planet, making their way on their own each day, would send me into a psychological tailspin if I didn't keep my mind busy with other things like writing this book. Even as I do, the urge to drive over to their apartments and randomly check in to see if they need money or my opinion or just a long and helpful hug has to be forsaken. It's the letting go I find hardest. But that's how this all works. It's the actual circle of life. If only I'd realized when my kids were watching The Lion King 6 million times back in the 90s, how on point that story was going to be. I used to think it was a corny Disney cartoon that led to a daily afternoon couch nap while my kids were singing along. Now, I wouldn't make it through the first 4 minutes without bursting into tears. I'm slowly coming to accept that this agonizing itch to shelter and safekeep my kids will never disappear. But it is easier to manage that monster when I stand back and reckon with the tools their generation has taken out into this world. Forget the bushy beards and candy booze, the ankle tats, and the eye earrings. Those are just surface elements when it comes to what millennials really have to offer. You are far more technologically advanced than we ever dreamed of being. And I'm realizing now that staring down at those phones is filling you up with useful and rapid information, which you process way faster than we could at your age. From every angle one can ogle, you guys seem to have an enormous grasp on science, math, business, and the arts. A constant flow of ingenious ideas and outstanding execution. Not to mention talent. Take my line of work for one example. Look at the amazing pool of actors you've added to it. I'll just randomly pick letters from the alphabet. C, Channing Tatum and Chris Pine. E, Emma Stone and Elizabeth Moss. G, Gyllenhaal, Glover, Garfield and Gosling. Jennifer Lawrence, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Lupita Nyong'o, Aubrey Plaza, Issa Rae. I can't keep going because this list would become 14 pages long. And when it comes to rock and roll, dear hashtag old assholes like me, the music millennials are making doesn't suck. You've just decided to listen with your drug-addled brain stuck in fuck the future mode. There are just as many great new voices arising from this generation as any previous one has offered up. Maybe more. Do they have bands that suck? Yeah, just like we did. I see their 5 seconds of summer and raise you one flock of seagulls. For every Jonas Brother, there is a Goo Goo Doll. For each Lumineer, a member of the Dave Matthews Band. But try these icons on for size. Kendrick, Adele, Beyonce, and Timberlake. Gaga, and Ocean, and Lorde, and Janelle Monáe. Tame Impala, and Perfume Genius. Just a few of the many millennials making distinctive music that will fill our ears for many decades to come. So put down your 50th anniversary deluxe edition special extra fancy-ass remix of Sgt. Pepper's and hit play on Lemonade or Damn. You might actually dance yourself into some newfound cognition. There are too many other talented millennial producers, directors, writers, and players to pick out and prophesize over. And a bevy of business brains that are building everything you read, hear, watch, drive, wear, ingest to live longer, etc. Michelle Phan, Mike Krieger, Divya Nag, Mark Zuckerberg, Carly Zakin, Evan Sharp, Danielle Weisberg, Julia Hartz, Ashifi Gogo, Alexia Sosis. And there are so many more, but I'm tired of typing their names. Google them, or just take my word for it. They're all smarter than we are. We ain't turning the planet over to millennials. We're standing on land they already own. Where the best place to see a good fight is on an airplane. Where the EPA is now run by people who think those letters stand for every pipeline available. Where a 71-year-old president acts like a 17-year-old spoiled brat and gets away with it. Like I pointed out earlier in this very book, if Trump can win, anyone can. That means you, or someone bright and sharp and well-spoken from your generation. But as Obama said in his farewell address, get active. Stop bitching and start organizing. My generation broke the planet and politics. Your generation can fix both. This land is literally your land. Take your 80 million strong army and do something with it. Fuck worldwide fame. Be famous locally, really local, in your own city for making a difference, in your own neighborhood for making things better, in your own house for raising a family and or keeping a relationship together. Be remembered for changing the future and making this country even greater. What am I going to be remembered for? Let's be honest. Probably my Oscar-nominated performance as the compassionate Sergeant Elias in Oliver Stone's powerful Vietnam epic, Platoon. As well as my SAG Award-winning role opposite Tom Hanks in Apollo 13. And let's not forget the Golden Globe and Emmy I garnered for Glee. But in the end, those awards mean nothing to me. Because locally, in my house, I hope to be remembered as Devin and Jack's caring, funny, and sometimes embarrassing dad. And as my stunning wife Anne's longtime paramour. Beyond that, I don't really give a fuck. As Julius Caesar once said, Veni, Vidi, Vici. In my case, loosely translated to mean, I came, I saw, I sang the asshole song. At least 500 times in public. Now go sing yours. Okay, that was a horrible ending. Sorry. Must be karma coming back to haunt me. I had to make fun of Michael J. Fox, right? Let's try this again. Find your leaders. Don't depend on more rich white retreads from the baby boomer generation. Choose someone smart, funny, and extraordinary, man or woman, and don't give up until you do. There is hope in change. It happens every 4 years. That's why America was invented, so that when you fall out of love with whoever's momentarily in charge, you can remove their power and say, take a hike, douchebag. To echo Winston Churchill's words from earlier on, if you're going through hell, keep on going. On the other side of the fire is a clear new day. I've been through a lot in my 6 decades on this earth, including the devastating and sudden early deaths of my dad and cousin Jerry, as well as 2 of my closest friends. I've overcome drug and alcohol abuse, not to mention a vicious battle against scarlet fever as a child and the tremendous odds of a roller coaster career while trying to feed and raise a family of my own. Plus, numerous health scares that almost took down my infant son, iron-willed mother, and other close relatives, along with diseases and sickness that have taken several other cousins, aunts, and uncles from us far too early. So, to paraphrase another old saying, what doesn't kill you not only makes you stronger, it makes you wiser and deeper and ready for more. I'm living proof. Now let's go kick some ass and get my kids to call me. Gratitudes and appreciation. I could not have written this book without dedicated help and boundless energy of several people. Not just the many morons who populate our world with idiotic ideas and Twitter twattery. Minus their daily douche behavior, I would have had little inspiration to sit down and vent for 300 plus pages. Or think of an app called the Daily Douche that reports their stupidity 24/7. So thanks to all the assholes out there. But I also want to tribute the truly creative brains who focused on this manuscript from day one of its inception. Jim Serpico and Eric Simonoff were vital coaches throughout the writing process from first pitch to final product. Plus, Jim's creative acumen and business approach cleared my head and my schedule. If you're a writer and Eric isn't your agent, you're missing a lot of laughs and a ton of great advice. Molly Stern and Trisha Buskowski at Crown were unrelenting champions of the original premise and fearless leaders when it came to putting this whole package together. They are also smart, funny, and a blast to work with, which helps a lot. Trisha batted about 995 when it came to giving me great notes. Other exceptional Crown assistants came from David Drake, Tammy Blake, and Julie Sepler. Without their urging and support, this project never gets off the ground. My lovely assistant, Leslie Fradkin, puts up with a lot and brings even more. She's hilariously terrific. Marissa Martins and Carrie Gordon at 42 West also make me laugh when we travel the earth doing everything we can to spread the good word on whatever I'm doing. They are really great at their jobs and a lot of fun to hang out with. My gifted friend of 40 years, the novelist and comedy writer Bill Sheft, remains a go-to guy for early reads and late revisions, not to mention his massive contribution to the 4 score and 7 seconds ago tweet section. I cannot say enough about how thankful I am to have a craftsman of Bill's caliber busting my chops. He's a first ballot mensch and a fellow Boston sports fan, which counts. Hashtag or forever. My wife Anne let me selfishly write into daily oblivion for months on end and graciously offered her succinct notes along with several great lines and ideas for this quote-unquote book. I place that word in quotes because I not only live with someone funnier and far more intelligent than I am, but a best-selling author of actual literary acclaim. Her talent is a wonder to witness. Combine that with her absolute devotion to our family, plus an always available ear for my opinions and those of our two adult children, and you get the most amazing person that's ever been my honor to know. And I get to spend almost every single day in her company. She forgives my flaws while making me a better man. I couldn't write this quote-unquote book or do anything else without her by my side. And finally, Jesus. Not Jesus the Son of God, Jesus. He's busy watching movies in Alabama. No, I'm talking about Jesus Alu. Why? Because when I was a kid, he was the only real guy I knew named Jesus. The only guy in actual day-to-day life who was walking around answering to that name. But in 15 years of Major League Baseball, his yearly batting average was .280 with 4 home runs and 44 RBIs. I remember thinking, if God exists, wouldn't he want the guy named after his only son to be a kick-ass ball player who wins the Triple Crown every year? Guess not. This tiny sports-related seed of skepticism grew into an oak tree of doubt about what the nuns were teaching us, which led to a lot of my whispered back-row sarcasm when the religion nun was writing on the blackboard, which made my friends cackle, which pissed off the nun and only increased the snickering when she tried to suppress our laughter, which turned me into a class clown. So thank you, Jesus Alu. And most final of all, I speak for every class clown of my generation when I say George Carlin was and remains our only fucking saint. Rest in peace, St. George of Morningside Heights. Your words are comedy scripture, as are those of the Reverend Richard Pryor. Holy shit. I think we're going to need two more statues. Life is too short, baseball is too long, and I hated the fucking emoji movie. Not as much as Operation Dumbo Drop, but close. Jesus H. Christ, 2017. This is Dr. Dennis Leary. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Why We Don't Suck and how all of us need to stop being such partisan little bitches. This program was directed by Scott Sherritt, executive producer Dan Zitt, recorded by Rob Sayers at Sound Lounge in New York City. Text copyright 2017 by Dennis Leary. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.